Hi, I'm Tamina, gender equality activist and sales professional at a global technology company. When I graduated from college in 2017, I was struggling to figure out how adulting works. School did not properly prepare me for some of the most basic things that my young professional life would eventually throw at me. If this sounds familiar, please join me on this journey to empower young women who are, just like myself, still in search of a fulfilling, purpose-driven life. Welcome to FemHive.
Today, I'm excited to welcome Loretta Falcone to the FemHive podcast. Loretta has arguably one of the most interesting jobs you could possibly imagine. She works for NASA and is currently planning NASA's first robotic mission to the moon. Loretta was also part of the team that discovered the correct rotation of the planet Uranus, which baffled the scientific community at the time. Loretta is a TEDx speaker, an expert in machine learning, and a former ballerina. Having lived a very eventful life to date, Loretta has had to pivot multiple times, and that's exactly what we're going to talk about on today's episode. Welcome, Loretta. I'm really excited to have you on the show.
Thanks, Mina. It's wonderful to be here, and thanks for the invitation to participate.
Of course. I'm really glad this worked out. So, Loretta, NASA, machine learning, ballet, TEDx, living in Italy, being a full-time mom, you have been able to squeeze in a lot for just one lifetime. To make it a bit easier for our listeners, could you help me put in some order into the life of Loretta Falcone and share your impressive story in your own words?
Oh, thank you, Tamina. So my life has been driven by curiosity and discovery. In the beginning, I learned mathematics to have a language to express scientific thoughts. Then I worked for NASA and tried to model kinesthetic movement of the planets with mathematics. Then from that kinesthetic perspective, I had a bad car accident, and that encouraged me to become a full-time ballerina. And I started auditioning for companies in Los Angeles, and then moved to Europe to dance full time. And from there, I started a family and encountered a few difficulties in the growth of my children, in their health, and tried to innovate some of those developments. And then coming back to NASA, I'm taking all of that experience back into my life and working with a wonderful team to explore the South Pole of the Moon.
That's so impressive. I don't even know what to say, especially the way you're framing it as part of discovering kinesthetics in essentially every possible aspect of your life. That's not something I would initially be drawn to, because as someone who's kind of a lost cause when it comes to all things math and physics, that's just like a completely different world to me. But Loretta, I'm very curious to learn more about your current project with NASA. You are planning the first robotic mission to the moon. What does your day-to-day look like?
Well, our day-to-day process at the moment during the pandemic is quite interesting, because we're even driving rovers on Mars from home. But in general, it's, you know, going to the South Pole of the Moon, we don't have any information, really. We're like children. We're sending little robotic two-year-olds to the South Pole of the Moon. And these are hard problems, because we don't know what to expect. We don't know what kinds of hazards they're going to find as the robots traverse the moon. And it's extremely cold. It'll get down to negative 240 degrees Kelvin. And the way that we are trying to plan it is to come up with a very robust idea of what it is that we want to accomplish, and to have contingencies for every kind of problem that we might fall into. And this is not unique to robotic missions to the moon. This is what NASA does all the time. So it's a lot of talking together on groups. We will talk from 4 to 30 people, sometimes 100 people at a time. And we're all focused on our aspect of the mission and how it's all going to come together. So we're all doing something for the first time. We're all sort of children in our domain of expertise, and we're all working together to solve a problem. And we do that with something called, at NASA, it's called flight techniques. And so we step through each conceived small idea. So for instance, what are you going to do? How is the robot going to explore an area that's permanently shadowed, that has no sunlight, when the rover runs on sunlight, it runs on solar energy. So how is it going to achieve that mission to go inside an area that has never had sunlight and to drill a hole and to extract the regolith, to observe it, and then come out again when there's no sunlight in there? So we work together to solve each problem by imagining what it will be like when you do it, to actually simulate what it's going to be like on the ground. And at first it's just talking through it. And then we try to do it with an actual prototype of the rover in the backyard at NASA.
Wow. That sounds like so complicated to me, but obviously listening to you talking about it, I know this is something you're really, really passionate about. And you're just mentioning contingencies as one of the biggest pillars of your work with NASA. Speaking of contingencies and contingency plans, the first time you were working for NASA was right out of college, Loretta. And there is actually a funny anecdote that we should share with our audience, because you didn't realize that you were actually afraid of space until you started working for NASA, which is, you know, pretty ironic. Do you have to come up with a contingency plan?
Isn't that embarrassing? Oh my God. I'd worked so hard. This was my dream since I was 7 to work for NASA. I finally get there. And when I was modeling the magnetosphere of Jupiter, I finally realized how incredibly small I was. And I was overwhelmed with the mystery of space and my place in it and how I was going to make a big contribution to the world and a contribution to society, and looking at my life, my little life, a speck of sand from Jupiter, I realized how insignificant I was. And this was really horrible. It was difficult. I mean, and worst of all, I couldn't tell anybody at NASA about it. I was really embarrassed. Like, does anybody else worry about this? And so I tried to talk to my friends about it, my friends outside of NASA, my friends from university. And they're like, you know, you're just weird. You're crazy. Like, who thinks about that? Don't you think about that? So dealing with it on a tactical perspective was, I would just put everything down. I would sort of have a anxiety, and I would walk outside and I'd touch a tree and I'd take my shoes off and stand next to a tree for a little bit, which was great because it was in California, Southern California, and it was kind of easy to do. There was a running path outside the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. But sometimes I didn't have time to do that. So I would just sort of get on the ground from my desk and just, you know, just kind of sit down for a little bit. And then one time my office mate walked in and he's like, did you lose something? And I was like, oh my gosh, you know. I lost my sense of perspective, you know. Anyway, I think it was kind of an ego crisis, and I had to become one with mystery, and I had to become one with like a leaf in the forest of the mystery of life, and not necessarily thinking that I could control it or make some big contribution to the wealth of society. I mean, I'm just like a little step, a little pea in the process of discovery. And it's not necessarily that I'm going to change the world at all, but I will hopefully be a part of making the world a better place or discovering something. And so going through that crisis brought me into a realm of humility. And there was an astronaut who helped me with it, and his name was Musgrave. And he just was very comfortable with just being a cog in the entire system. Just look at it as, you know, a leaf in the forest. You're not the wind. You're just part of it, and feel excited to just be part of it. And so whenever I get stuck in a big problem, I think, okay, we're just going to do it one step at a time and see if we can make an iterative difference in our understanding without necessarily coming up with the big theory that's going to change everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like if I now start to think about how small and insignificant I am in this entire world, that'll freak me out a little bit as well. But I love hearing about the period of time that you're going through and that self-discovery and self-reflection phase where you realize, hey, like, yes, I might just be like one individual trying to change the world, but at the same time, nobody can thrive in isolation, right? And especially as human beings and Homo sapiens, we are striving for being part of one society and being part of something bigger. So I think the word you're mentioning, humility, is very important to mention in that context. And at the end of the day, like looking back now, obviously you were a small part of discovery, but those discoveries have had a significant impact on humankind. So you definitely shouldn't underestimate the part that you're playing in all of this, Loretta.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like trying to be part of the right wave, or the wave that's going to have the greatest influence. Mm-hmm. I think we'll probably come back to that idea as we progress in our conversation.
No, definitely. Let's actually shift some gears right now and start talking about pivoting in life. You briefly shared your story earlier of how you started out by studying mathematics in school, and then you had an accident and that resulted in you wanting to become a full-time ballet dancer, and you moved to Europe, then you became a mom, and now you ended up back at NASA. Loretta, what would you say was the first significant pivot you had to make in life, and how did you cope with that?
Gosh, Tamina, I think one of the first significant pivots that we all make, just kind of shifting away from the values of my family and pursuing what I wanted to pursue, and finding my own voice. And for me, one of those first basic shifts was just going to university. So I grew up on the East Coast, and I went to school on the West Coast. And I wanted to go to school in an area that was a little bit more accepting of women in technology. And so I chose to go to UCLA. And that threw me into a big city and into a challenging academic environment. But that wasn't necessarily what everyone had planned for me. And so just listening to that voice and acting out on that voice was probably my first significant pivot.
That is actually very relatable, because as you probably know, most of our listeners are recent college grads, female young professionals in their early to mid 20s. So they've recently gone through that process of leaving their families behind, moving from coast to coast, or at least to a different state, or maybe, you know, in my case, it was moving to a completely different country. And it was not in order to necessarily break off our family relations, but to kind of, you know, figure out who we are as individuals, where do we want to leave our mark in the world, like how can we actually develop our own voice. So I think what you're saying just now really resonated not only with me, but probably with everyone who is listening. So we definitely shouldn't underestimate the power of college and the college experience in general, because like you're saying, you were so far away from your family and had to learn how to be by yourself and develop your own thought processes and your own voice. So that's really beautiful.
Right. And I think that's a really important step in growth that we should always go back to as we reach the next challenge and the next pivot we're going to take. Like, remember how successful you were in that first one. Mm. And even if you weren't successful, remember how much you learned and how resilient you were. How, if you did fall down, how did you pick yourself up and how did you cope with it? Learning those tools and then remembering those tools when you come up to the next challenge is quite important.
Absolutely. If I think about, you know, who I was before I entered college, or the first few weeks and months of college, obviously I was a very, very different person back then. And I feel like, you know, every one of us grows with our challenges. Like if I had imagined or even tried to imagine the life that I would be living now and the things that I'm capable of now, even just a few years back, I would have called myself like ludicrous. And so it is really interesting what you're saying about those transformational experiences that you can have in college as a young individual, should you be so lucky to be able to go to college, but also how all of these experiences that accumulate over time add up and turn you as a human being into someone beautiful that is so rich of all these memories and all these different relationships that have also impacted your life and the different experiences. So definitely cannot stress that enough, how transformational certain experiences are. And at the time, you probably don't even realize how transformational these experiences end up being for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
So, Loretta, I know another pivotal moment in your life was when you discovered that your son had a very rare disease, PANDAS syndrome. And not only were you obviously a worried mom, but by applying your own scientific knowledge, you actually helped the doctors identify the disease. And that's the story you've been sharing on various TEDx stages. Tell us a little bit more about what that experience was like.
Yeah, Tamina, so the experience with my son was overwhelmed by fear and the abyss, this sort of this darkness. And it very much reminded me of difficulties that I had solving problems at NASA, but it was so emotionally overwhelming. Like, okay, I had problems, you know, feeling like a speck on a speck on a piece of sand when I was working at Jupiter, but I don't know, the sheer insignificance that I felt, or incapability perhaps, of being able to help my son suffering was overwhelming. One of the first things I had to do, I think, was to embrace the fear and to take a step forward and think, okay, you can do this. You can try. You can help your son. So my son was crying and he said, Mama, help me, Mama. And as a mother, that just brought me to my knees. And I thought, okay, I'll do the best I can. I'll do whatever I can to help you. And so significantly, it was sort of like leaving the door of his hospital room to walk out and to confront everything that I didn't know about medicine or science. And so I threw myself into it. I would sleep maybe 1 or 2 hours a night, and I was just trying to figure it out, trying to solve his medical problem from many different perspectives. When I figured out, I think I know what it might be, and it's really easy to solve. And I put together a presentation and presented it to all of his doctors. This was in Italy, and it was I think culturally difficult to confront established thinking. So solving the problem was one big problem. But then after I solved the problem, to sort of implement the solution in front of this established thinking was just another hurdle. And it was reminding me again of NASA and coming up with a new idea and trying to introducing a new idea is always, it's always very difficult. And perhaps the people that are most invested in the previous way that we think of an idea give you the greatest resistance. So, but I kept trying to work with love. And I thought, that's okay. I'll get my son. I'll help my son. There were several other children in his same ward that were suffering these strange, severe onset of symptoms. And it turned out that we all had the same problem. It was a streptococcus that had like crossed into the brain. It was just the weirdest, a very strange thing. But even the boy next to him in the hospital was suffering from the same medical problem. So instead of going back and trying to change that hospital or that branch of medicine, I tried to bring it to the world, to put conferences together and to conduct scientific studies, cross-cultural scientific studies, and to bring this idea out into the world. Because if we were experiencing, how many other people were experiencing it? And worst of all, how many children were like my son saying to their parent, like, somebody help me, somebody help me. So I wanted to be sort of an advocate for these children in pain and bring this possibility of a new way of thinking into the world. But it's all started out with a lot of fear and a lot of difficult obstacles in procedures and the way people think about things, the way people do things in medicine. And I didn't know anything about medicine. So it was a lot of fear motivated with a lot of love. It was a lot of thinking motivated with love, the love for my child, the love for children, and the love for humanity.
Wow. First of all, thank you so much for being so vulnerable with me, Loretta. I really appreciate that. I don't have children just yet, but I really want to have some in the future. So I cannot even, you know, fully understand what motherly love actually entails. But, you know, having had a few conversations around that topic with my own mom, I can only imagine how strong your desire to help your son who was suffering at the time was. And I love how you're phrasing it as, you know, you're acting out of both fear and love, and your son is doing better today, correct?
Yeah. Yeah. My son's doing really, really well.
I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah. Wonderful story. And, you know, since we're already on the topic of family and love, I know that another big pivot in your life, Loretta, were your relationship challenges. And I can't imagine how tough it must have been for your family. My parents actually separated when I was really young, so I never had that, you know, stereotypical traditional family environment. And most of our listeners are in their mid-20s, not married, and some of them are even scared of having to think about potentially making that commitment at some point, especially seeing how divorce rates keep rising. So, Loretta, I feel like it would be really helpful to hear from how you were able to overcome what must have been a very emotionally challenging time.
Yeah, it's quite challenging, and I think that's a different kind of challenging. Not necessarily so overwhelmed with fear, but there's a process in mathematics called kerneling. And when you take a solution that you can't solve in one space and you try and pop it up into a higher dimension and solve it, and then bring the solution back down into lower dimension. And I think going through those kind of difficult emotional, difficult problems to solve that are kind of emotional and strategic in nature, it's really to kind of look at the collective solution, like what's the best solution for everybody involved in this situation, and not a tit for tat, not like a, I am against you, or I want to get the most for myself, but let's look at the solution that will help everybody involved. And I think that's like another application of this coming into the collective love, like working with love to kind of come up to the best solution for everybody and thinking outside of yourself, right? It's perhaps one of the lessons that's coming out of our discussion, Tamina, is letting the ego kind of fall down to the wayside a little bit and trying to work for the best solution for everyone, either in collective science or in collective relationships like a family. It's trying to let your ego really step back and bring the greatest love to the greatest number of people, or the greatest insight to the greatest number of people.
Wow, that was such a mature answer, because I feel like in these types of situations, it's sometimes difficult to, you know, remain rational and not let your ego or feelings get in the way of your actions. And again, I love how you're strategically and mathematically approaching these issues. Like you were mentioning that the perfect kerneling. I don't know. I've never heard of that before. Bringing something in a higher dimension, solving it there and bringing it back down. Like that sounds really, really scary to me. But yeah, I don't even know if my brain was actually like capable of doing something like that. But I love you talking about it. It's super, super interesting. But yeah, I feel like a very valuable takeaway is that in those types of situations, especially when there are kids or other people who might be in pain are involved, it's to let go of your ego. So I think that is a beautiful lesson that you probably learned and that your family learned throughout that process. Going back to that topic of pivoting, obviously pivoting means that you sometimes have to reinvent yourself while still staying true to yourself and your core values. Obviously, you've had to pivot multiple times in life now, Loretta. So what tips do you have on reinventing yourself?
You know, it's exactly what you said, is being true to your core values. Because like the robotic exploration of the South Pole, you don't have enough information about the hazards that you're going to find in your life. You don't know what kind of emotional crater you're going to fall into. But you want to believe in yourself and believe in your ability to be able to transcend any emotional difficulty and any other difficulty. Failure is such a great lesson, because you know that you can get out of any problem that happens. And when you can't see exactly what the future is, you just need to dig into your core values. I kind of think of it as the rudder of a sailboat, and you're confronting the wind. You might tack back and forth to try and get where you're to sail into the wind of the obstacles of your life. But you know that you believe in yourself, and you believe that you are on a mission of creating something beautiful in life, or giving back to the world, or, you know, I think it's easier when your mission is about creating and giving, and not necessarily about making money or a car or living in a place. It's not like a personal goal, but it's a big mission goal. And when you're working with a big mission goal and you're using your core values, it helps to drive you through significant obstacles in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was beautifully said. Especially the part about you not having enough information really resonated with me. Just going back to what I was saying earlier, some of the challenges that I'm tackling now, like both professionally and personally and emotionally, I wouldn't have been able to tackle those challenges 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago, because I hadn't failed often enough yet. I hadn't had all of these experiences that allowed me to grow, those experiences that accumulated and allowed me to gain all of these new skills. And ultimately, yes, that was a lesson for me to continuously believe in myself and my abilities, even if there is something, a problem or a situation that I hadn't seen before. And I didn't necessarily have like a step-by-step guide on how to find a solution to that problem. But just by believing in my ability and drawing back on these past experiences where I was always like somehow able to find a solution to a problem, I think that's something that people should probably like talk about more when it comes to being fearful of the future, living in the moment, and just like, I guess, like trusting the process.
Yes. Because you're doing exactly that right now with this podcast. You're taking your life challenges and you're giving it back to the world. Your personal challenges, you're collecting the insight from different women that have confronted their challenges and making the world a better place by bringing all this information out to everyone that can absorb and grow from it. It's a beautiful process, isn't it?
Yeah, it totally is. And thank you so much. That's exactly what I'm actually trying to accomplish with FemHive. And it ties nicely into where you're also mentioning a few moments ago about your mission being about creating and giving, not necessarily about capital gains. I mean, who knows, maybe down the road, I'll be able to turn this podcast and all the opportunities that might arise from it into a business. But for now, it's all about going on that journey, following that mission of female empowerment and sharing the stories of some badass women like yourself who are changing the world. And then going back to our core audience, women, very ambitious young women in their 20s, I believe, and I obviously speak from personal experience, I believe that there is this self-inflicted burden among young, ambitious people, setting very unrealistic expectation that you have to have everything figured out by the time you graduate college or within the first few years of your young professional life. Obviously, Loretta, you are the living and breathing testament that this is not the case. You can, in fact, pivot multiple times in life, both personally and professionally, and still be wildly successful. What advice would you give to all the young, ambitious women out there that would help them, you know, chill a little bit?
Yeah, it's a really, I very much identify with that enthusiasm when graduating colleges and running into your first big job and wanting to make a big, like I was talking about. And then all of a sudden realizing how smart you are in the confront when confronting the huge trends in life and where society's going and where economic development is going. And so the one piece of advice I can say is to work on being part of the process and look at the bigger mission and to get outside of yourself, like to realize it's not, it's what you can bring to the development and the mission in life and the very long journey of growth. And everything that we learn from each stage in our life is something that we can bring forward into the next stage. It's not necessarily about being an expert in everything that you are accomplishing or everything that you are working on at that moment of time, but realizing that all of the tools that you're developing in each area of study or each area of perfection of your performance is something that you bring into the next phase of the mission of your life. And it's the biggest piece of advice that I could give is just to let go of your ego and to kind of melt into the wave of where life is going and to be sort of water around a rock, to be as flexible as possible and to be absorbing as much as possible and to be open to new ideas and changing and growing and to not be too fixed. When you can't see the future, remember all that you accomplished before. Remember all, harness into how well you survive, how resilient you are. When you get down, know that you're going to get right back up and that life is a beautiful place and we're just here for a short period of time in our, you know, in our whole cosmic existence. So let's just make the most of it.
Beautifully said, Loretta. And I think I couldn't have ended this episode on a better note. So just to summarize, always look at the bigger mission. Life is a long journey of growth. What we learn at one stage of our life, we can bring to the next stage. Let go of your ego, be flexible, open-minded, and just continue to ride the wave of where life is going, because we don't get to spend long enough of the time on this planet.
Exactly. We're privileged to be here, aren't we?
We truly are. So let's take it day by day, week by week, and over time, all of our experiences and memories and all the relationships that make life so worthwhile will add up and accumulate and help us continue to grow throughout life. Awesome. Well, look, thank you so much for being on the podcast, Loretta. I really, really enjoyed our conversation. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Tamina. It's been a pleasure.
I'm glad. And for you all out there, I highly recommend checking out Loretta's TEDx talk called From Galaxies to Neurons, How to Break Through Belief that she gave at Berkeley in 2017.
And that concludes our show. Thank you for listening to today's episode. Since we're just starting out, it would be amazing if you left us a positive review on Apple Podcasts and shared FemHype with all your female coworkers and girlfriends so we can empower as many young women as possible. Make sure to also follow us on Instagram and LinkedIn. I'm Tamina Stoll, and I hope you will be tuning in again next week. Take care, ladies.